Practice looking unapproachable and slightly annoyed. A good way to achieve the proper look is to eat a lot of cheese the night before. The two competing employees will quickly realize that their salaries depend on thwarting the other and being the first to complete the task. They will start to fight like drunken pit bulls in a traffic accident. At first blush, it might seem that your employees are becoming frustrated, stressed out, maniacal heart attack candidates. But in fact, it's healthy competition. People have thrived under these conditions well into their 50s. Best of all, it allows the cream to rise to the top. Then you can skim it off in the next round of downsizing. Notice that many of these management suggestions work best when they are used in tandem. Rumors are an excellent way to keep your employees nervous and edgy, which is similar to being alert. Actually, it's better. When they're alert, they realize what you're doing to them and they resist. But when they're edgy, they work like crazed bumblebees and die of stress before they become cynical. In other words, everyone wins. A good way to start a rumor is by denying it. Everyone knows that most business rumors are true, or at least based on truth. The best way to make your denied rumor appear true is to slip in a detail that you really shouldn't know if the rumor were false. Now let's talk about communication. Give verbal instructions, not written, whenever you think you might want to deny that you are involved in a decision. If an employee later tries to implicate you, just look at him as if he must be insane. If you continue this practice consistently, the employee will actually become insane, thus covering your trail completely, not to mention making downsizing a breeze. But it's not all good news. There can be some negative consequences to making all of your employees insane. Remember, there's no free lunch, unless you ask your secretary to buy it for you and then you forget to reimburse. So it should be no surprise that having a department full of lunatics might have a downside risk. The danger begins when mild lunacy turns into dangerous insanity. Look for these warning signs. Employee appears pleased to get constructive criticism. Employee acts as though career advancement is a possibility. Employee develops an irrational love of microwaved popcorn. Employee uses the word proactive in casual conversation. If employees are unmotivated, sometimes that can be a sign that they don't have a newsletter. A newsletter is an efficient method for management to get the message out about the priorities of the company. Select a member of your staff who has no valuable job skills and put that person in charge of creating a newsletter. Any employee would consider it an honor to be singled out in such a conspicuous way. The newsletter writing task can be added on top of any existing job description, so it's essentially free to the company. Remember to point that out to the employee you select for the job. Employees often whine about a lack of communication from senior management. The newsletter is an effective way to fill the communication gap without imparting any information. Remember, nothing can be more demotivating than the truth, so try to fill their brains with other stuff. Employees need lots of communication to remain motivated. That can sometimes be at odds with your desire to keep them in the dark and continue shoveling work on them. If you already have a company newsletter, the best way to generate more communication without the risk of transferring information is a staff meeting. By definition, a staff is a group of people who report to the same person and have very little need to talk with each other. It's a good idea to make them sit in a room together for up to 10% of their total productive life. Reiterate the things that employees have already heard through other channels. This part of the meeting has no value to the employees, but it's an easy way for you to show leadership. You can count on at least one member of your group to ask endless clarifying questions on each subject, thus demonstrating incredible analytical prowess, until every other member of the group begins to fantasize about strangling him with the cord from the overhead projector. Give each employee an opportunity to drone endlessly about uninteresting job-related problems. The employee will instinctively use acronyms and obscure references that prevent any information from being transferred to other members of the group. Don't encourage the employees to be relevant, interesting, or brief. Remember, the goal is communication, not a transfer of information. If the employee concludes his monologue by asking for your help, brush it aside by saying, "Let's take that discussion offline," meaning, "If you bother me with that again, I'll send you to gather data." Anytime you give the appearance of teamwork while making coworkers look bad, you have done your job. Your staff might try to trick you into talking about things that matter to them, such as salaries, staffing levels, and pending reorganizations. Deny having any information about these subjects. These topics are demotivating by their very nature, and they should be avoided. Simply remind them of the competitive environment and tell them that it's business as usual. That will have a calming effect. If you hear a rattling sound, that's the noise employees' brains make while spinning around in their skulls. It's quite natural and no reason to be alarmed. As a manager, you'll have the least amount of useful information of anyone in the organization. You can compensate for that by being the one who does all the presenting. Use computer slideshows and overhead transparencies to disguise your cluelessness. The key to presenting information which you don't understand is to try to limit the presentation to a few areas that are so boring and so obvious that your audience will be absorbed with thoughts of assisted suicide, yours, and they won't have time to dwell on your lack of knowledge. The best way to know if a topic is suitable for your presentation is to say it aloud and listen for an involuntary "duh" sound springing from the bowels of your throat. Yes, you do have bowels in your throat. All managers do. Here are some good presentation points. Number one, we're in a competitive business. Duh! Number two, we plan to improve our products and services. Duh! And number three, my tiny empire needs more resources. Duh! See how that works? If you don't feel like giving verbal instructions, you can use your new ESP to send messages. As a manager, it is sufficient to think what you want and wait for your employees to implement it. Some employees will whine that they cannot pick up your thought waves, but logically, if you're sending the thought waves and the employees aren't receiving them, the problem is on their end. Document their communication failures so you can refer to them during the next performance review cycle. As a manager, you will be able to bend spoons with your mind as easily as you can bend them with your muscles. In other words, not at all. You're a manager, not a triathlete, and those spoons are sturdier than they look. As a manager, you will be getting paid much more than the people who report to you. Therefore, logically, it is safe to assume that what you do is much more difficult than what they do. They might try to convince you otherwise, but it's a trick to avoid work. For example, they might ask for your approval on documents that you don't understand. The only possible explanation for your lack of comprehension is that the documents are put together by someone who has poor communication skills. Be sure to point this out. Remember, communication is a two-way street. As a manager, you'll need some valuable success strategies. For example, taking credit for your employees' ideas. It's rare, but sometimes your employees will accidentally come up with a good idea. When that happens, you must first reject the idea and then later claim it as your own. You can reject the idea using one of these time-tested pieces of logic. Number one, if it's such a good idea, why isn't everyone else doing it? Number two, it's too late. Everyone else is already doing it. Then let the good idea age for a while. An hour is good. Call the employee into your office and explain the idea in detail as though your previous conversation had never happened. At this point, you might think the employee would recognize your idea as his or her own and protest. But experience shows that the employee's central nervous system will go into shock when you explain your idea, thus causing the deer-in-the-headlight reaction that you want. Sometimes, despite your most diligent efforts to prevent it, your employees will create something successful without giving you an opportunity to hijack credit during the idea phase. If you are victimized by that scam, don't panic. You can still take credit by affixing your name to the finished product. Justify it to your employees by reminding them that the other people in the company are too level conscious, and you need to make sure their work gets the attention it deserves. List your name as the esteemed project leader. The employees who did the actual work should be given less important-sounding titles, such as typist, staple person, and assistant photocopier. Many people make the mistake of trying to get ahead by succeeding at difficult tasks. That's much more effort than the alternative that works just as well, screwing up something important. Your stature as a leader grows primarily through the process of getting lots of attention. It's hard to get attention by succeeding, because your boss will deftly hog the glory. But if you screw up a huge project, your boss will slither aside faster than an adder at the ice capades. Your name will become forever linked with the epic failure you have created. Being linked with epic failures sounds bad, but it's not. The next time senior management needs someone to manage a big project, they'll say, "Who has experience?" Your name will be on the top of the list. Everyone else will either be busy or unknown. You'll be the obvious choice, the person who knows what pitfalls to avoid. And don't worry that those senior managers will scrutinize this decision too closely. They're busy screwing up things to enhance their own careers. Your employees will often whine about the need for training. Try to ignore them. Training can lead to no good. In the short term, it causes missed work. In the long term, it causes employees to leave for jobs that pay a living wage. Nobody wins when that happens. Your first line of defense is logic. Try to talk your employees out of taking training classes by using this bulletproof argument. "Why do you need all of these technical training classes? I didn't need any training to do this job." Sometimes logic won't be enough, especially if the dolts in the budget department allocated money for employee training. The employees will point to the training budget as justification for their futile requests. Solution? Travel, and lots of it. Sign yourself up for trips to exotic locations, to attend workshops, and visit with customers. This will drain your total budget to the point where strategic cuts are necessary, i.e., elimination of the training budget. When the training budget disappears, the employees will be disgruntled, but at least they won't have enough skill to get a job someplace else, and that means increased productivity. But even as you work to eliminate the scourge of training, it will be necessary to constantly say things such as, "Training is a high priority." That keeps the employees from thinking you're a clueless, oxygen-wasting piece of dung. Try it. It really works. Empowerment is the process of shifting blame from yourself to the employees. According to highly paid consultants, this will make the employees happier, thus reducing their unreasonable demands for a living wage. The most efficient way to implement an empowerment program is to have meetings where you punish people for the decisions they made, while at the same time encouraging people in the group to think for themselves. Eventually, the employees become numb, thus developing a healthy tolerance to the hopelessness of their situation. Hopelessness isn't the same as happiness, but it's enough to make the employees stop complaining, and that's a good start. If you're a narrow-minded bigot, and I'm guessing that you are, you can disguise that fact by supporting the company's plan for diversity. If you've been a manager for a while, and you've shown incredible favoritism to people who look and act like yourself, you can address that problem head-on by forcing the victims and the innocent bystanders in your department to attend diversity training classes. Don't worry that all this fuss about diversity will make it impossible to openly discriminate against other people. You can still do that, but you'll have to shift your focus. You must stop discriminating on the basis of ethnicity, sex, disability, age, sexual preference, if it's a type the news media approves of, religion, if it's one that has a lot of money. You may continue to discriminate on the basis of ugliness, stupidity, reputation of alma mater, height, weight, hair, clothing, sexual preference, if it's a type the news media doesn't like, religion, if it's a stupid little unpopular one. If you're an imbecile, you might want to hire some management gurus to give you advice. If it sounds as though it would be hard to follow their recommendations, don't worry. You can pick the parts of their recommendations that you like and still get many benefits. For example, let's say your consultant advises you to seek employee input and make changes based upon it. That would be a lot of work, and your employees generally have bad ideas. What you can do is accept the parts of the recommendation you like, collect employee input, and discard the rest, the part about making changes. You'll get half the benefits of the consultant's advice, but without the hassles. You can create the illusion of being decisive by reorganizing the department. To the ignorant observer, reorganizations look like progress. And since most, if not all, observers are in fact quite ignorant, any organizational shuffle will make you look like a visionary. You can reorganize every 6 months without anybody catching on to what you're doing. Any more than that, and it will appear random. Any less than that, and it will make you look like you don't have a plan. A handy way to remind yourself when to reorganize is to do it at the same time of year when you adjust the clocks by an hour. And just a little tip, that's also a good time to replace the batteries in your smoke detector at home. And another tip, don't move the clock 1 hour in the same direction every time you change it. Sometimes you have to move it in the other direction, even if you don't understand why. Reorganizations give you an excellent reason to make the employees move their possessions to identical cubicles a few feet away. The employees will whine and curse about the loss of productivity during this time. It is your job to explain the obvious benefits of the move. Some of those benefits are: they can enjoy the sounds and odors of new neighbors, improve communication among coworkers who have totally unrelated jobs, get to wear casual clothes on move day, and best of all, etc. During your tenure as a manager, many bizarre corporate initiatives will pop their heads out of holes like demented woodchucks looking for any opportunity to run over and bite you on the foot. Examples of bizarre and demented programs include Total Quality Management, Reengineering, and ISO 9000. Nobody expects you to make these bizarre management techniques work, but you will be expected to look like you're a team player. There's an easy rule to remember when it comes to artificial participation. If it's on a coffee mug, it's a program. As soon as your company rolls out, for example, the Excellence in Customer Care program, order coffee mugs with that phrase and give them to all your employees at the rollout meeting. You could extend your deception by ordering notepads with a slogan emblazoned across the front. Coffee mugs and notepads send an important message to the employees. Specifically, that message is, pretend you're buying into the program and maybe you'll get some more free stuff. Find the most useless employee in your department and put that person in charge of whatever the new management initiative is. Give that person a title like Manager of Excellence in Customer Care. This way, you appear to be complying with the corporate initiative, but you lose very little in productivity, except for the endless burdens this person will place on the other poor employees who are trying to do real work. After coffee mugs and notepads, the primary tools of any bizarre corporate programs are, number one, the useless meeting, and number two, the useless tracking report. You should require lots of both. Otherwise, people will think you're cynical. When the new program is announced, your employees will run like frightened chipmunks at a jackhammer convention. They will try to redefine whatever they're doing as part of the Excellence in Customer Care program. Play along with their charade, because you're all in the same boat, and ask them to track their progress weekly. Call the measurements metrics, so the whole thing doesn't look stupid. If you have no idea how to do anything useful at your company, sometimes you can disguise that fact by merging with a company that is even more clueless. Stock market analysts like it when two clueless, limping companies get together to leverage their synergies. Mergers take a long time. They generate a lot of press and involve lots of money. These are good things for your career, especially the part about it taking a long time. With any luck, you'll be prancing off to a new job long before another manager begins selling off what's left of the merged company at garage sales and flea markets. You can find ways to leverage synergies with almost any two companies. For example, let's say one company makes laundry detergent and another makes soft drinks and humor magazines. There's a natural synergy because every customer who laughs while drinking a soft drink will need to wash the nose snortage out of his garments. This is an important market segment. Now let's discuss compensation. The compensation plan is an important tool for keeping salaries low. Your weasel-like employees may try to manipulate the system to get more money for themselves, using various scams such as hard work and significant accomplishments. You can parry any thrust by using the following responses to their pleas for more money. If the employee says, "My performance was exceptional, give me a raise," the manager should say, "But your pay is comparable to the industry. Go away. If the employee says, my pay is below industry standards, give me a raise, the manager should say, but your performance was bad. Go away. If the employee says, my performance was exceptional, and I'm paid less than the industry average, give me a raise, the manager should say, but it has been a difficult year for the company. Go away. If the employee says, my performance was exceptional, I'm paid less than the industry average, and the company has record profits, the manager should say, how would you like to be a team leader? You can increase your bonus by making it impossible for your subordinates to get bonuses of their own. This is known as good budget control, and it is always rewarded. There are two main ways to do this. Number one, link subordinates' bonuses to goals so far in the future that the Earth will first be destroyed by a rogue asteroid. Number two, link subordinates' bonuses to goals which can be easily thwarted by your single-minded drive to become a leader via the process of screwing up gigantic projects. Most subordinates will see right through this subterfuge and become angry and bitter. With any luck, some will quit, thus lowering expenses and increasing your bonus even more. You are entitled to more money than the non-management employees because you take on much more risk. That's basic economics, although some people don't seem to understand it. The high risks of managers include, number one, risk of being revealed as an empty suit, two, risk of being hit by lightning while golfing, three, risk that nobody will do CPR on you, four, risk of having to spend time with other managers. To compensate for these high risks, managers are entitled to obscene salaries. I don't mean obscene in the sense that the ex-presidents shown on the currency aren't wearing any pants, even though they aren't. I mean obscene in the sense that there's a lot of money involved. In contrast, non-management employees earn less pay because they take on fewer risks. The low risks of non-managers include, number one, loss of squalid shelter known as home, or number two, starvation. Obviously, non-management employees have so little to begin with that their total risk is limited. So if they start whining about how much money the managers make compared to them, remind them that it's completely fair because managers have more risks. That should satisfy them once they understand the logic of the situation. You'll need to know how to get rid of employees. Let's start with downsizing. You probably refer to your employees as the company's most valuable assets, and with good reason. Every time you get rid of one, earnings increase, and so too does the value of your stock options and bonus. It's like printing your own money. The employees who stay behind become shell-shocked, bitter, and overworked. But amazingly, this has no impact on you whatsoever. In fact, it might even make them a bit more responsive to your requests for status reports. It's never fun to fire someone, unless you're having a bad day yourself, but it can be very entertaining to torment employees until they quit on their own. It's economical, too. You can save money on layoffs by being so unpleasant that people quit without qualifying for any separation package. Use these techniques to encourage people to resign. Number one, staff meetings. Two, teamwork. And number three, your personality. If that's not enough to make people quit, you might need to work the opposite angle to emphasize the positive aspects of being unemployed. Emphasize the fact that some of the happiest people alive are jobless, and that can't be a coincidence. Some of the happy unemployed people include children, retired billionaires, dead people in heaven, and homeless people with shopping carts. The last category, homeless people with shopping carts, isn't as obvious as the others, but think about it. They get to simulate the joy of shopping all day long without anybody ever asking them if they want the extended service warranty. That would make many people happy. Employee turnover can be a healthy thing. It gets rid of highly paid malcontents and infuses the company with a healthy dose of bargain-priced, untrained employees. And you can always compensate for the shortage of employees by making the remaining employees work harder. There's no logical limit to that. To ensure a robust turnover, gradually decrease the quality of the working environment until the company's retirement plan looks good in comparison. As with all harmful activities, you will want to dress it up with some positive-sounding name, such as Competition 2000 or the like. Most importantly, you need to know how to be a happy manager. Money can't turn you into a happy manager. You also need stock options, parking spaces, free meals, and the opportunity to humiliate those below you. As a manager, you'll experience the rush of power and prestige that will make you more attractive to the opposite sex, assuming whatever you're doing sexually has an opposite, or to your own sex, if that's what you prefer, or to various battery-powered or inflatable devices, if you're not a people person. You can magnify this euphoric management experience by increasing the gap between your status and that of your employees. There are two ways to increase the gap. Number one, grab more loot for yourself, thus increasing your status. Or number two, humiliate your employees, thus lowering their status. Depending on the profitability of your company, there might be a limit to how much loot you can grab for yourself. But luckily, there's no logical limit to how much you can humiliate the employees. Gradually chip away at your employees' perks and benefits until they have nothing left but their human dignity. Then start chipping on that. You can't expect to get it all at once. It's best to think of it as a long-term project. Use the 12-step employee status reduction program, which starts with the biggest status items and then gradually moves to the more subtle elements. On the top of the list, you can start with number one, decrease the average size of raises. Number two, eliminate internal promotions. Number three, announce an end to job security. Four, reduce health care options. Five, cut training and travel budgets. Six, combine sick days with vacation days and call it all a time bank. Number seven, reduce the size of cubicles. Eight, ban decorations on cubicle walls. Nine, ban microwave popcorn. 10. Monitor internet usage. 11. Start an Employee of the Month program. And 12. Shave their heads. Although the employees are not terribly bright, they might notice a trend developing after about the 9th step of the program. You can disguise your true intent by pretending to give them something that compensates for their losses. For example, you can allow them to dress in bad clothing one day a week and call it casual day. This accomplishes your primary objective of lowering their status while still cleverly appearing to give them a benefit. The biggest threat to your happiness as a manager is the never-ending parade of whining employees who will try to bring gloomy issues into your life. Your only options are to ignore the employees or to punish them. But realistically, only one of those options has entertainment value, so it's an easy choice if you're feeling playful. Punish your whiners with any of the following methods. Number one, assign the whiner to fix the problem in his spare time without spending money. Number two, put the whiner on a task force with people who whine even more. And number three, make the whiner the chairperson of the morale committee. In time, it will become easier to ignore the whining noises emanating from your employees. You could even learn to enjoy it, like crickets on a summer night, except they're much bigger and uglier, and you wouldn't want them on your property after dark. At some point, you'll realize it's silly to try to make your employees happy. There are so many employees, and they all want different things. Once you abandon the irrational goal of improving employee morale, then you can start enjoying your work. Take every opportunity to improve your personal happiness at the expense of your inherently disgruntled workforce. You need to learn how to deal with bad employees. There are two types of employees, bad ones and good ones. Bad employees bumble through the day, not making any significant changes, not questioning the system, not doing much of anything with an impact. They are largely harmless. The so-called good employees are more dangerous. They are constantly trying to innovate, to change, to question the status quo, and take bold business risks. Obviously, you have to get rid of the good people as soon as possible, or they will make you miserable. You might have to pay them to leave, using what's called a reduction in force program. This program offers large cash payouts to employees who are willing to resign. The magic of the program is that it pinpoints the good employees with laser-like efficiency, since they are the only ones capable of getting jobs elsewhere. After a reduction in force, The bad employees remain happily behind, delighted to be employed. Everybody wins. Sometimes your professional staff will not be nearby when you feel like abusing your power. That's why you have a secretary. Not all secretaries are born bitter and resentful. You have to train them to be like that. But it's worth it, because once your secretary is molded into a venom-spewing, two-headed pit bull, your other employees will leave you alone. That's how leisure time is generated. Here's how you train your secretary to be mean. Personal phone calls. Secretaries should be encouraged to make lots of personal phone calls to loved ones. This guarantees an endless stream of tragic and unsettling news that will keep your secretary edgy and mean. You can try to generate unsettling news in the office, but it will only be marginally effective. For the good stuff, you have to let them call home. Menial tasks. It is your job to continuously search for assignments that are senseless and degrading. Tasks that make double-sided photocopying look like organ transplant surgery. For example, you could ask your secretary to sort your pencil shavings into small, medium, and large sizes. Or ask your secretary to send a fax when you're standing right in front of the fax machine. For the maximum impact, say something like, "You're so much better at it." Condescension. A good way to humiliate your secretary in front of others is to refer to him or her as your boss. Complain about your pay. There's nothing that annoys your underpaid secretary more than hearing you complain about your financial problems. But do it indirectly, so you don't appear insensitive. Say things like, "My God, do you know how much Mercedes-Benz wants for sheepskin seat covers?" Boss amnesia. Once a day, ask your secretary to do something stupid, and then later act amazed and disappointed that it was done. When your secretary points out that it was your specific direction, just shake your head and mumble something about attitude in a vaguely menacing way. Multiple boss syndrome. Share your secretary with another manager who also demands 100% availability. As icing on the cake, have your secretary supervised by a senior administrative person who is even more psychotic and bitter than you are. The contradictory goals of the many bosses will drive normal secretaries to the brink of murder or suicide, and that's right where you want them. In the unlikely event that your job generates any real work, fob it off on your underlings by having them form self-managed teams. That's an elegant way of saying they do your job in addition to their own. This is a bit like teaching the cows to milk themselves, but it's possible if they're flexible. The ultimate goal of all managers is to dupe the employees into doing to themselves the things that managers would normally do to them. You'll need to give the employees a reason why they should do your work. Set the stage by being inaccessible for meetings and unknowledgeable about what your employees do for a living. Make bad decisions or no decisions at all. In time, the employees will come to see you as a huge obstacle to progress. They will become more frustrated than a woodpecker in a petrified forest. They might even ask for permission to do your work. Then there's the one-on-one review. You can have some fun criticizing the employees during the one-on-one review session. Plan ahead. Make sure the performance review form includes a section where the employee can specify the training and development they think they need, i.e., their flaws. During the one-on-one session, quickly scan the development plan and zero in on the employee's self-assessed weaknesses like a dog digging for a soup bone. Conversation might go like this. You: "I see your technical skills are inadequate." Employee: Actually, I'm a recognized expert in my field, but I like to keep up with emerging trends by taking classes." You: "Then you admit there are things you need to know that you don't know." Employee: "Well, yes. I mean, no. I wouldn't put it that way." You: "Sounds to me like you have a communication problem, too." Employee: "What the hell is going on here?" You: "Have you considered counseling? The company has a program." Make sure you get involved with creating strategies. Corporate strategy is defined as whatever you're already doing, plus all of the good stuff your competitors are doing. So if, for example, you're the low-cost leader, i.e., you make crap, and your competitor makes a high-quality premium brand, your strategy would be something like this: make crap and charge a premium price for it. Some critics would say it's not a strategy at all unless it allows you to focus your resources in one logical direction. But what the critics fail to take into account is that strategies are things you talk about, not things you do. There's no reason to be restrictive. As a manager, you should talk about strategy every chance you get. It's easier than working, and it pays exactly the same. People look up to managers who talk about strategy, and why not? A manager who spends the day talking about strategy is a person who has found a way to get paid for doing almost nothing. You have to respect that kind of initiative. Despite the fact that your soul abandoned your body when you became a manager, there will still be some corporate tasks that are so horrible, so evil, that you will not be able to do them yourself. Other times, you might need to do something cruel, but you won't want to leave your fingerprints at the scene. For these situations, you need a human resources staff. Some people are naturally equipped for careers in human resources. In other cultures, these folks would become serial killers or ruthless despots. But we live in a civilized society, so these irrepressible scamps can channel their talents into the field of human resources instead. But suppose all the good human resources candidates are dead, imprisoned, or living in Bolivia under an assumed name. What then? My recommendation is to hire a cat. Cats seem friendly on the outside, but they don't care if employees live or die, and they enjoy playing with them before downsizing them. You can always count on a cat to have good morale, and that's important in a company where everyone else is getting gloomy for no apparent reason. If your company doesn't have enough irrational or sadistic policies in place already, your human resources group can create some. Human resources people sit there all day in their squalid cubicles, thinking about how they are not part of the value stream of the company, and thinking of ways to abuse the employees who are. This situation can lead to entertaining policies that are distributed in huge binders. In other words, human resource professionals are a lot like your legal staff, but without the compassion and verbal skills. Human resource professionals are trained to enjoy the discomfort of others. This comes in handy when you have bad news to give to someone, such as downsizing. One way to downsize someone is to let him know in a professional and unthreatening environment. For example, you could leave a yellow sticky note on his chair that says, "You're fired! Leave immediately, you worthless deadwood!" But another, less stressful method is to have the human resources department handle the whole thing for you. That way, it's off your conscience, and the human resources staff has some fun, too. It's a good idea to keep your human resources people busy at tasks such as downsizing and randomly changing the salary plan. If they have too much time on their paws, they begin inventing policies that could even affect you as a manager. The human resources job description looks something like this. Number one, prevent the hiring of qualified employees. Two, close the gap between employment and slavery. Three, create ever-changing compensation schemes that prevent employees from figuring out how to maximize their income. Our next topic is identifying suck-ups. Every manager needs some pathetic suck-ups around. Suck-ups don't have much practical value, but neither does a beautiful flower, and nobody thinks flowers are a bad idea. A good way to identify the suck-ups in your ranks is to see who is willing to mimic your most bizarre clothing, mannerisms, or speech patterns in a pathetic attempt to gain favor with you. The challenge is to create a personal style that's eccentric, even totally dorky. For the men, try wearing bow ties, suspenders, or sweaters. For the women, try applying your makeup with a paint roller or wearing earrings the size of summer interns. During meetings, clasp your hands in front of your face in a strange and inhuman fashion and see how many people imitate it. When you make a point, no matter how dumb it is, check for head bobbing among the potential suck-ups. Your most talented suck-ups will be bobbing like chihuahuas waiting for a biscuit, all bright-eyed and enthusiastic. Some attendees will say things like, "Exactly," and "You're so right." Make a mental note of the more exuberant suck-ups in case you ever need a favor, such as having the brake dust licked off your chrome wheels. At first, they might sicken you with their behavior, but over time, you'll grow to appreciate them, possibly even rewarding them with jobs as team leaders. If you listen to this entire tape, you probably have too much attention span to be a manager. But if you skip to the end to see how it turned out, you probably have the right stuff. This tape couldn't possibly cover every management situation, so you'll need to use some common sense. Assuming you don't have any of that, here are the top 10 rules of management. They'll help you get through most ambiguous situations. Number 1, you're always right, even when you're stupid. Number 2, the physical laws of time and space were meant to be broken. 3, the problem is not a lack of resources, it's a lack of meetings. 4, when in doubt, ask for status reports. 5, if you're talking, you're communicating. 6, low morale is caused by character flaws in your employees. 7. If 10 people can complete a project in 10 days, then one person can complete the project in one day. 8. Teamwork is when other people do your work for you. 9. Employee illness is a manifestation of laziness. 10. Abuse is a form of recognition, and recognition is what every employee wants.
We hope you've enjoyed this program from Harper Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.